time for us to engage in the Better Health Radio Show. And as usual, Dr. Renee Boyce. Good evening, Doc.
Good evening, Gregson. How are you this evening?
I am not bad at all. Not bad at all.
Yes, I am very chipper in the studio because the temperature, the ambient temperature, is conducive to human life.
And I am so perplexed. Why? Because when I came in, it was bouncy, nice, and cold. And now it's just blah.
And the Lord does not come.
If you can see her. If you can see her facial expression.
Good evening, everybody. And welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. If you want to reach us here in the studio this evening, you can give us a call at 434-1790. Or you can send us a WhatsApp. We love getting your WhatsApps. 266-4862. Those numbers once again, 434-1790 and 266-4862. As usual, we do appreciate your calls. You help to make the program the lively and informative program that it is. Today, I'm in studio. I was going to say by myself, but I forgot that Gregson is sitting right in front of me.
That's all right. In terms of medical expertise, you are here by yourself.
That is quite correct. There you go. That is quite correct. And this evening, we are going to be discussing sexually transmitted infections. And we are going to be discussing this not as an exhaustive topic, because if we were to start discussing each of the sexually transmitted infections, we would be here the same time tomorrow. But we're going to do a general overview. And the aim of doing this overview is to see if we can help with behavior change. Because surprisingly, with all the knowledge that we have, there still doesn't seem to be that shift in person's behaviors. And we'll discuss this a little later on. You were going to say something.
No, I was just thinking in the past it used to be referred to as STDs. What's the reason for the change in
nomenclature? We call it nomenclature. Naming. And I knew somebody was going to ask that question. I feel very proud of myself. So sexually transmitted diseases as opposed to sexually transmitted infections. One group thinks that a disease has signs and symptoms. And with most of the sexually transmitted infections, which is the current name, sexually transmitted infections, they are asymptomatic, meaning that persons do have these illnesses, infections, and they're not aware because there are no signs or symptoms. Or if there are signs and symptoms, they're so mild that they're easily overlooked. That's one line of thinking. Another group of persons has said that diseases have no cure. However, infections can be cured. So some of the sexually transmitted infections, by taking medication, you can cure the infection. So that was the reason that I read up for the change in name.
Okay.
Diseases as opposed to infections. However, the underlying problem is still the same, that they make you ill, and some of them are incurable, like HIV, like herpes infections, and some of them have lasting effects, not only on you, but on your potential as females to have children, or on your unborn child. For example, syphilis, a child who's born to a mother who has syphilis and they get what we call congenital syphilis. They have problems with their lips, with their eyes, with their heart. So these diseases, infections, they're nothing that we should just simply say, oh, well, they got a little gonorrhea. Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to define them, then these would be infections which are passed from person to person through sexual contact. And I had my little disclaimer all prepared.
And I interrupted you, didn't I? Jeez, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Not really. So for those who are listening with younger children, or if they're children who are listening, make sure that there's an adult listening with you, because there is some adult content. Mm-hmm. And it's better that children listen with people who can
explain
to them. Mm-hmm. Clearly, but of course we're not going to be lewd and crude on the radio.
It's not in your nature.
Trust me, there are some things, you know, I laugh at myself sometimes. This year, Lord willing, is going to be 15 years that I've been married. And there's still some things that make me blush, believe it or not. And my friends, I have some girlfriends who have no morals or scruples. I just say morals, but
and I get what you're saying.
Yes, mm-hmm. They have no shame. And so they torment me. They torment me because of my quirks and so on and so forth. And I also say to people that I remember being in Jamaica. I wasn't married at the time, no. And I watched a 16-year-old girl get a speculum examination. That's when they use the speculum to insert into the vagina to open it, to take a look at the cervix and the vagina as well. And she lay down there without batting an eyelid. And I thought to myself...
And you're there thinking,
Like Grace said, if you could see the look on my face... I was speechless for days. That thing haunted me. You know.
Oh, she realized it was for medical purposes, and therefore she made sure that she cooperated willingly. Nothing else to that story.
Ever the diplomat. Ever the diplomat.
Once upon a time, some classmates, something like you, we used to call me the UN.
Well, for obvious reason, perhaps that is what you call what's the word, prophetic, Gregson. You never know.
Well,
maybe we shall see you in the newspaper one of these days.
Really? I don't have that sort of luck. We discussed that already.
So back to our sexually transmitted infections. The thing about these sexually transmitted infections is that they don't discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen to anybody. Any age, any race, any stage in life. It can happen to older persons. And it is for us as human beings not to discriminate against persons who have acquired sexually transmitted infections, no matter which sexually transmitted infection it is. Let's take HIV, for example. We're going to get to them, you know. But we still have a very big problem here in Barbados with HIV and persons being discriminated against. And I was thinking that there are some people who would say, you know, that's because they're homosexual men and they quote unquote deserve to get this illness. But let's look at another scenario. For example, let's take a heterosexual union, husband and wife. We were recently talking about people who have been together for 72 years and another group of persons for 48 years. And let's just say that one partner got tired with the other for whatever reason, some lapse in judgment, and decided to have an extramarital affair. Contracts HIV, no testing, and then the primary union, they get back together, and the HIV is transmitted to the other person unwittingly, unknowingly. So this person hasn't gone and had a homosexual relationship, but they end up with HIV as well. So you can't partially discriminate how persons acquire an illness. The way it needs to be looked at is that they have an illness and they need to be treated, and you have to work on their behavior so as to prevent other persons from
doing the same thing.
From doing the same thing or from acquiring the illness that they have. So some statistics. I got the two S's said. Oh, my goodness me. Some words are so difficult to say.
This thing kills me.
I'm not going to say it again. No, if you look at the United States.
We'll just say stats.
Yes, wonderful. They're very good at collecting stats. I was about to attempt it again. Stats. They're very good at... collecting stats.
Mm-hmm.
And they have said, this was in 2017-18, that there are 20 million new cases per year of sexually transmitted infections. Now, I can't even begin to count 20 million. Mm-hmm. That's how many, 10 times our population, just under 10 times our population, because we are at 285,000, I think it is.
I say 300, but people say less than that, but go ahead.
Well, I haven't done the census, and the numbers that I saw was 285,000. So about 10 times our population. And the alarming thing is that 50% of them are in the 15.
Wait. No, it might be 100 times our population.
Right, because that's 285.
Yeah, that's 2.8 million if it's 10. 285,000 by 10 is 2.8 million, not true? Somebody will tell us. Never mind.
Call in and tell us.
Somebody will tell us.
Do you have a degree, Gregson?
Yes, I do.
So we're sitting here, it's between us about 3 or 4 degrees.
I'm trying to find a calculation of a math problem. Wait a minute. People that sat here haven't passed the other day. Let's call them quickly. I will stop distracting you. You go ahead, Doc.
You see, this is what happens all the time. Persons like Gregson.
Yep.
Blame poor old me. Who will make you laugh. So I'm going to sit down here behind this mic and the water is running out of my eyes and he's over there as calm as a cucumber. I'm not going to look at you anymore. I have pulled that proverbial curtain.
Look, somebody's actually calling.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't know if they're calling to help us out, but you want to find out what they're calling for? All right, let's see.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Doc, good evening to you and Greg. Yes, sir. The working population is 230 million.
No, no, no. We are talking about our population and how.
Right, right.
And trying to figure out how much, how many times more is 20 million.
This is what was we're trying to decipher. And by the way, the American population is not 220 million, as you said. You said
320 million.
Correct. 320 million. You're right there. Yeah. Right.
320 million.
We were trying to decipher very quickly the multiplication of 285,000 by 10, because she said it was 10 times our population.
She was trying to compare the American population with ours.
No. She gave a figure of 20 million new cases of STI cases.
Yeah.
And we were trying to say that's about 10 times our population. But I think it's 100 times our population.
I wasn't the closest to the radius, so I may not have heard it.
I'll tell you what. Go get your calculator quickly and multiply or divide 20 million by 285,000 and call us back and let us know.
All right, Greg.
All right, Chief. Good, good. Take care.
Yes. So I think it's 100 though.
Because somebody will tell us.
Yeah, it's 100. It is 100. Yes. So the alarming thing, remember, so just to clarify, we're not saying that the American population is 20 million. We're saying that each year in America,
right,
there are 20 million new cases of sexually transmitted. Okay, I think somebody is calling to help us solve this conundrum. Good evening and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show. Remember to turn your radio down.
You did better than that.
Oh, they put down?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's not there anymore. I shouldn't blame them.
Okay.
All right.
Can always call back. Mm-hmm. So, 20 million new cases of sexually transmitted infections every year, but the alarming thing, okay, I got past alarming, because each time I said alarming, we got interrupted.
We're good. Keep going.
Okay, yeah. So, the alarming thing is the age group. Most of these, 50%, as a matter of fact, are between the ages of 15 to 24. That's the USA. Well, mm-hmm. Let's bring it home to Barbados. In 2016, there was a study done on some of these specific sexually transmitted infections, and one of them was chlamydia. And the prevalence rate at that time was 13.6%. All right. Prevalence is like a snapshot, the amount of a particular thing at a given time in a particular region.
Mm-hmm.
So the prevalence of chlamydia was nearly seven times that of gonorrhea. So chlamydia was like 13.6%, gonorrhea was 2.7%. Let me just bring it a little clearer. The prevalence of diabetes at the same time was 17.6%. So we know how many diabetics we have in Barbados. So if the prevalence of diabetes was 17.6%, and the prevalence of chlamydia is 13.6%. You can imagine then how many cases of chlamydia there would be at that particular point in time just by looking at the percentages. And we're not going to do any more math. What I'm going to say about that is the age group, face. Again, 15 to 29. That's the same age group.
And this is here we're talking about now.
Right, so our age group is 15 to 29. In the US, it's 15 to 24. So suffice to say, it's the young people who are the ones who seem to be getting all the newer cases of the sexually transmitted infections. Now, I am going to throw out a question, and I want the answer at the end of the show. So somebody has to call in and tell me the answer to this question. The question is, why is gonorrhea also known as clap? Yes, so that's the question. Why is gonorrhea also known as clap?
Well, I can tell you right now, I don't know.
But you can't call in, so it's not for you.
I don't know, so I'll have to listen as well.
Good. So we spoke about what sexual contact was. Oral, anal, vaginal, or genital skin-to-skin contact. Because some of the agents which cause the sexually transmitted infections are bacteria, some are viruses, some are, what do you call them, trypanosomes? That's a bacteria. But parasites, that's the word I was looking for. Some of them are parasites. So let's talk about the common or the more commonly known STIs. So gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis, HIV, trichomoniasis. We are going to discuss these ones in brief, but there are so many more.
Trichomoniasis. I don't know what that is.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I got to stop interrupting you. Go ahead, dog. I do beg your pardon.
It's quite okay. That's the purpose. The purpose is all about educating, all about learning more. So my goal is that at 7 o'clock, you know more than you knew at 6 o'clock.
Fair enough.
So that's the purpose of the Better Health Radio Show. It's all about education and understanding. And no question at all is a foolish question. So what are some of the risk factors for acquiring these sexually transmitted infections? What would you think would be the one risk factor if you had to think about one?
What was the question again?
Clearly you were not paying attention.
I was trying to think while you were talking. What are the risk factors?
See, men can't multitask. Cannot think and listen at the same time. What do you think is one of the greatest risk factors for a sexually transmitted infection? Seriously, Gregston?
I don't know.
Okay, let's try this. Class?
Go ahead, Doc. Let's see if I can guess it.
If we are going to be discussing sexually transmitted infections, what would be a risk factor for a sexually...
Sex?
Oh my goodness.
Come
gracious
on, Doc.
Go to the front of the class.
No, my hand, that can't be the answer.
Of course it is. It is a risk factor. No, unprotected
that's what
sex.
That's what I'm saying in the back of my mind, because she was looking for something else. So I'm like, what else could she... Nah. Yeah, I knew that.
Can you get a sexually transmitted infection if you have protected sex or no sex at all?
Well, not no sex. Some people argue with protected sex.
Well,
some people argue about that, but I had protected, you know, so.
Well, with that, I've learned over the years to take that with a pinch of salt.
Okay, yes. So you don't believe them. Well.
So that's one of the risk factors, right? Unprotected sex. There are some of the sexually transmitted infections, such as hepatitis B and human papillomavirus, where there are vaccines to protect against these.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not vaccinated and you do contract the virus, then you could develop the illness. But having a history of multiple sexual partners puts you at risk for developing sexually transmitted infections, because it makes sense, you know, you're going around with this person and that person, your risk or the likelihood that you pick up something increases with the number of partners. And having had a history of a previous sexually transmitted infection also puts you at greater risk for acquiring a sexually transmitted infection. The use of recreational drugs, because let's take alcohol, your judgment is impaired. And some persons do things under the influence of alcohol, your judgment is impaired, and you see somebody who, under the bliss of alcohol, is the most gorgeous human being you've ever seen, and the words sound so melodious in your ears, and you are so weakened by such a lovely person that you've come across that you're willing to do anything, which, under normal circumstances, you would not do.
I'm here with... I'm here thinking how many bottles of alcohol you'd have to drink to think that of me. I really must stop this.
Okay, I am going to appeal to the station manager for another...
But you just give me cause to think of a good joke. Anyhow, go ahead, dog.
I am going to put it in writing. Sexual abuse. Those persons who unfortunately are abused sexually. We think about the elderly, we think about children, and we think about persons who unfortunately might be victims of rape. They also are at risk for sexually transmitted infections. So what do you think, Gregston, would be some... Yes, I'm going to ask you, because you're the only person in here with me. Some of the symptoms of having acquired a sexually transmitted infection.
What are some of the symptoms?
Mm-hmm. Up and on. Up and on.
You're going to start that now? Give me a hint.
None. Remember the first thing I said when we were
talking? See, so then I was right, because I can tell you one. So then I was right. Go ahead.
Some people do acquire sexually transmitted infections and they have no clue that they have picked up this particular infection.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said earlier, sometimes the symptoms are so mild. I remember once we were doing a course in HIV management, and it involved looking at the history, the clinical examination, and the different medications and combinations, so on and so forth. And one of the things that they had said is that sometimes when you acquire the virus, you get this flu-like illness. And I thought to myself, my goodness gracious me, how many people think that they have the flu when they
something
might
else,
when it could be HIV, which is all the knowledge you need now to go and get yourself tested. And it's not my aim to scare people and to think that you acquired the flu last week and you need to go and get yourself checked for HIV. But I'm going to say right now, if you don't know what your status is, please go and get checked. And I usually have to tell persons who I recommend that they go and get tested, not to go home and berate their partner. Don't go home and stab anybody. For example, if a female came with a vaginal discharge, there are so many different causes for vaginal discharges. But I take that opportunity to speak about sexually transmitted infections and so on. And this would be a good opportunity for you to get your screening test done and so on and so forth. And the persons usually get very upset. Maybe that's not a good method. But they usually get very upset, and some people have threatened to kill their partner. So I usually have to be a mediator and just say that it's a medically recommended test. We are telling people, instead of asking people to volunteer to be tested, the tables have turned now where we're suggesting to people, or we're advising them, go ahead, go and get your testing done. It's better to know than to not know. We still live in a society that would prefer not to know, especially when it comes to HIV. But we were chatting about the different symptoms, and one of them would be sores. For example, in syphilis, where the primary infection is, primary being the first point of contact, they can get these sores called chancre, C-H-A-N-C-R-E. Yes, C-H-A-N-C-R-E. I think that's how it's spelled. You can get bumps, for example, with HSV. Yes, HSV, you know, the cold sores, you know, the one that you get on the corner of your mouth, right? There is HSV-1 and HSV-2. HSV-1 is usually the one that you get on the corner of your mouth or your lips, and there HSV-2 is the one that's usually sexually transmitted. So wherever you have sexual intercourse, whether it be mouth, whether it be bottom, whether it be vagina, wherever else persons decide that they do want to try things, you can get these bumps and sores. You can also get pain and burning on urination. So pain and burning on urination are not normal. You should not have pain when you go to pass water. That's, pain is a warning. Something, somewhere is wrong. But pain and burning on urination is not only caused by sexually transmitted infections. General infections of the urinary tract as well can cause pain and burning, as well as stones, kidney stones, bladder stones, so on and so forth. But my mantra always is, if something has changed from your baseline, from being normal, and then it has gone abnormal, then that's for you to go and see your doctor. That's why we're there, to sift through the symptoms and try to come up with a diagnosis and do further investigations and testing to figure out why you are now having pain on passing urine. You can also get a discharge from the penis. And I say to persons, if you have a fluid coming from somewhere where previously there was no fluid, you need to see your doctor. If you stuck your finger in your ear, sorry.
You ready, Doc?
Yes.
All right.
You know, the old people say it went down the wrong gullet. I almost thought I was going to choke there. So if you have, you stuck your finger down your ear and you realize that in a couple of days that there's discharge coming out of your ear, you don't stay at home because there wasn't fluid coming out of your ear before. Same thing. If you didn't have a discharge coming from your vagina before and now there is a discharge, you need to go and get yourself checked out. It might turn out to be a yeast infection, which is not a sexually transmitted infection, or it might turn out to be gonorrhea or chlamydia. So the best thing to do is to, and I'm going to say ad nauseum, go and get yourself checked. One of the other things you can have is abnormal bleeding for women from the vagina, or you get pain on sexual intercourse. If you get, so you know when you get a cold, sometimes the glands in your neck swell up, which are your lymph nodes. They fight infection, so when they're fighting infection, they tend to get larger. So the same thing happens, especially with the glands in the groin. If you develop a sexually transmitted infection, you can have your lymph nodes in your groin swelling up. And there's a particular STI, lymphogranuloma venereum, I think that's what it is. I could be wrong, but that one comes with very large swollen lymph nodes. Lower abdominal pain, because the genital tract is just below the lower abdomen, so you can get pain. And of course, if you get infections, you get fever. And depending on the type of STI that you get, that sexually transmitted infection, you can get a rash all over. You can get rash in specified places like the hands and feet. Now, before, we had spoken about the different causes, so I'll just go over that. For example, chlamydia or gonorrhea, they're caused by bacteria. And viruses, human papillomavirus, human immunodeficiency virus, hepatitis and herpes. These are all viruses and parasites. We spoke about that. Trichomoniasis. So one of the things that we want to caution you about when we come back from our first break, we're going to talk about the complications that can arise after you've acquired these sexually transmitted infections.
As a nation, we're better. As a people, much stronger. We're the healthier generation. Better choices, better health.
Better Health Magazine, available for sale at all your nation distribution outlets.
Okay, 6:26 is our time. You're listening to The Voice of Barbados, 92.9 FM. It's the Better Health Radio Show. And on deck is Dr. Renee Boyce, and she's discussing today STIs.
So we are talking about STIs, previously called STDs, but as we had mentioned earlier, there was a change in the name, and somebody mentioned here on WhatsApp that it used to be called venereal disease as well. Actually, one of the tests, the VDRL for syphilis, they don't use it as much anymore. They use the RPR test. But VDRL stands for Venereal Disease Research Laboratory. That's a particular test. But yes, it used to be called venereal diseases. And I'm sure that I would not like to be told in this day and age, you know, I have a venereal disease. So sexually transmitted infections, you know, it sounds a little better. It comes off the palate a little better. So we did discuss the reason why we changed the name. In the sexually transmitted infections, there tends not to be the recognition of signs and symptoms. This is what one group thinks, that since there are no clear signs and symptoms, sometimes it's better to call it an infection as opposed to a disease. And another group has said that, well, you really shouldn't call it a disease if it can be cured. Diseases tend not to be curable. So since some of them can be cured, then maybe we should call them infections. It doesn't matter what the name is. What is concerning would be the fact that we can't seem to get rid of the sexually transmitted infections. And clearly, by the fact that people are still having sexual intercourse, I don't think that we will ever get rid of the sexually transmitted infections. And there has been a resurgence, for example, of syphilis in the past few years, seen especially in those persons, those men who have sex with men. The rates of syphilis in those cases seems to be higher. We were, just before the break, we were talking about some of the signs and symptoms of the sexually transmitted infections. And I think one of the ones that I still am a bit amused at patients, our healthcare system still allows for persons to be seen at our government institutions free of charge at the point of care. Because it's not free, because other persons are paying for it. And therefore, it still bothers me, puzzles me, that you could be having abnormal bleeding from your vagina. You can be having severe lower abdominal pain and a discharge coming from your vagina, which does not smell correct. And you stay at home. How? Why? I don't know, maybe it's fair, and I'm not sitting in a seat of judgment, but I'm saying that if you realize that something is wrong, go and get yourself checked. Go and get yourself checked out. I don't think that if you have symptoms and signs that somebody would tell you no, that you can't be seen or you shouldn't be seen, you know? It really does bother me. I could understand if there was no place where you couldn't get seen, but there are several places you can be seen here.
Well, I don't know if it's a case of, you know, Barbados is small, so he or she might be the doctor, and I go, and something is wrong, then he knows, and possibly he can tell somebody else, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if it's that factor, but I do agree with you. If something doesn't seem to be right, please go on and use the facilities that we have available to you.
And that's very wrong, because doctors take an oath.
Yes, I know that. And I'm very well aware of that.
And trust me, doctors, the vast majority of doctors, I do believe, take that oath seriously. Mm-hmm. There are some doctors who will go to their graves with things that patients have told them. And it is very disrespectful if a doctor goes and mentions that he or she saw you somewhere in a clinic, and this is what you had, and you have every right to sue that doctor. for breach of the contract that you have with them, having gone to them for medical attention. But in most cases, doctors, I honestly believe, wouldn't do that. I think it's a case of fear, mm-hmm. not wanting to know,
what the problem is.
But by the time you get there, then you're onto complications, which is what we're going to talk about now. Pelvic pain, because we're thinking about the reproductive organs, the cervix, the vagina, the uterus. All of these can become infected with the different bacteria and viruses. We have pelvic inflammatory disease, which is one of those conditions, like the name pelvic. So the organs in the pelvis, inflammatory, so there's inflammation and disease. In this case, I don't think it's curable. I don't think PID is curable. Maybe the obstetricians and gynecologists can correct me on that one, knowing that specialty.
Considering somebody's allowed me to know that that was not one of their favorite rotations.
Oh, goodness gracious me. Are you ever going to let it go?
Maybe.
I am going to categorically clear this up. Just because obstetrics and gynecology was not one of my favorite rotations, as a matter of fact, I confess it was my least favorite rotation, does not mean that I did not learn anything during the rotation.
I'm quite sure you learned very well.
And that I did not do my job well, because I did. However,
it just was not one of your favorite.
It will never be one of the specialties that I will pick up. Never. It will not happen. So you can have pregnancy complications. So those persons who have a sexually transmitted infection, they're at risk for babies with low birth rate, and those babies then, and premature babies. So then there's a whole long list of problems. And when we have our pediatrician on, we're going to talk about premature babies and all the complications that they can have. And then there is an increased risk of miscarriage and early pregnancy loss that can come about as a result of having these sexually transmitted infections. Now, one of the sexually transmitted infections, which does not stay where, I don't want to say where it belongs, but which tends to go all over the body, is gonorrhea. So you can have a vaginal or penile infection with gonorrhea, but then you can get an arthritis. So I do recall having a patient who had a primary gonorrhea infection. So he had the green discharge. And as a matter of fact, this gentleman, when he came in, told me he knew what was wrong with him. He said, "I have gonorrhea." And I said, "Okay, so how do you know this?" And he went on to say, "Well, I had it before." So remember, we spoke about previously having a history of sexually transmitted infections put you at risk, because there hasn't been behavior change. And that's the end focus of today's program, trying to get persons to understand the risks, those two S's, associated with poor sexual choices and the consequences that can result as a result of choosing poor sexual health. I'm trying to be diplomatic, because you don't want to step on anybody's toes about their choices in behavior and so on and so forth. We have a call. We're going to take that call. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Hi, good evening. This is Anthony Holt here.
Hi,
not
Mr.
stepping
Holt.
On anybody's toes either. What role does herpes play in HIV?
They say that when you have one sexually transmitted infection, you are more likely to acquire another. I don't know if there are shifts in the epithelium which make the make the human immunodeficiency virus more likely to get across skin barriers. I don't know if a decreased immune system already being positive with herpes makes you more susceptible. All I know at this point in time, in this general overview, is that having one puts you at risk for getting another.
What about gamma herpes that forms this Kaposi sarcoma? This is a skin cancer.
What about it? We do know that one of the, because the human herpes virus isn't just one, there are several of them. So one of them is responsible for forming, causing Kaposi sarcoma. So you're asking what about it?
Yeah, and what about the fact that it said that the particular vitamin A And is 11 cis retinol that blocks Kaposi sarcoma?
Right. So I am not aware at this point in time about vitamin A being used as a treatment or studies being done. That right now is out of the scope of my knowledge.
Okay.
About the treatment of Kaposi sarcoma. But I am sure, and I hope that they would be listening at some point in time, that the persons who are doctors in the LRU Lady Mead Reference Unit and those who specialize in HIV care, if they're listening, we do appreciate if they would call in and clarify that for us. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, well there's the 11-cis retinol, an analog of vitamin A, that is said to effectively work with reducing the Kaposi sarcoma. But the thing is, I used to be fascinated by the viral infection, HIV. However, I am not clear on that its horizontal transmission from the animals to human beings. I am wondering specifically, how does that go down with the fact that it was found in the mucous membranes of the anus of males, and yet still they're saying that it also was diagnosed in earlier in the years in human beings. And to me, from the 1981 research in the United States, it would seem as though that it has been a separate and distinct development. And I don't think we are paying much attention to that.
Well, what I can say is that what we know about viruses is that they have the ability to mutate. They have the ability to affect one place and not another. And your last point was that we are not paying much attention. This is where I would have to disagree flat out. I think that those persons who are involved in the management of patients with HIV and AIDS are looking at the research and trying to...
Pardon me, I don't mean it that way. I mean in terms of transmission. We're not paying much attention to the fact that the transmission seems to be hedgy.
Whilst transmission is a problem, I think behavior is more of a problem than how the virus is transmitted, because our problem here in society is the unprotected sex and the multiple sexual partners that seems to be causing the increased rates of HIV. What we need to worry about, sir, I believe, is trying to get our population to understand the way that it is acquired and ways to change their behavior so that they can protect themselves and their loved ones.
But the behavior is not changing.
Right. Therefore, if it was transmitted, sir, by breathing the air of... No, let me not say that, because next thing you're going to hear that Dr. Boy said that you get HIV by inhaling. But if it were transmitted, for example, by... What can I say? By butting heads with somebody who has HIV. That is not as important, sir, as getting people to understand you must not butt heads with somebody that has HIV if you do not want to acquire HIV. The most important thing is to effect behavior change.
Well, one of the things that I think would affect behavior change is that, for instance, I usually say to people on the streets, because I've done a lot of gossip on HIV, if I get HIV, I'm going to let the whole world know I got it. That's me. I know about the other people. But unfortunately, I don't have it. So
unfortunately?
I understand what he means by that.
Unfortunately, he doesn't have it, so he can't proclaim from
exactly
the rooftop. No. Oh, okay.
Well, basically what I'm saying is, also besides the fact that it is a behavior change, it is more important that people be honest. That's the behavior change, that people need to be honest with themselves.
Right. So that's one of the things that we're going to talk about in the last 15 minutes of the show, the behavioral aspect. The first part of the show is just general knowledge, because when I first started, I said that we were going to do a general overview of the sexually transmitted infections, because certainly all the ways of transmission, the symptoms, signs, we can't do it for each one. So we're just doing a general overview. And then after that, based on what we would have done outlining those things plus understanding what the complications are, then we're going to move into trying to get persons to understand why they should try to change their behavior, because we are not going to eradicate any of these illnesses if we still have the same problem with behavior. If our 14 and 15 year old girls are still accessing money from older men without using protection, we're not going to get anywhere with this.
It's difficult.
It's not impossible.
I'm saying that from the point of view of being a member of a family-led education committee. I think it's extremely difficult with that situation.
Sir, if we can change the behavior of one person, then we have done something. If after this hour one person is inclined to change their behavior, then I would have done something profitable.
You are doing something profitable, and I hope that more persons come up and face the reality of changing their behavior.
Okay, Mr. Hope, thank you so much. I got to go because we got another call on the line. Okay, sir?
Well done. Thank you too, sir.
All right, take care of yourself. All right, another caller for you, Doc.
Good evening and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Yes, good evening, Doc.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Gregson.
Yes, sir.
Doc, I'm sure you must be aware.
Don't be so sure.
That the practice of oral sex has certainly become the favorite pastime amongst most Belgian men and women. How good or bad a practice is this, Doc? I will listen to your response on radio.
Okay, so thank you for that question. One of the things that we did when we started was saying that one of the ways that the sexually transmitted infections, one of the ways is that oral sex. And therefore, I cannot speak to it becoming one of the favorite pastimes or not, because I do not have any empirical evidence as to the number of couples who do or who are involved in oral sex. What I can say is that what happens in some of our secondary schools is because it's, I don't want to say quick, but there's not much need for undressing, depending. It's one of the things that teenagers and school children tend to get up to. And it's also part of the normal sexual practices of couples, whether they be male and female, two females, whatever the definition of couple is.
I'm not sure he was trying to get a hit at how popular it was. I think he just said that in passing. Yeah, I realize it's passing. I think what he's really getting at is if there's a danger.
There is. There is, because there is a mucous membrane. There are barriers. There are skin barriers which can be broken and which allows viruses and bacteria and parasites to get in. So it is advisable for those persons who are involved in oral sex to still use protection. Dams, diaphragms, condoms, they should still be used because you can still acquire sexually transmitted infections through oral sex. And one of the misconceptions earlier up in the game, before we knew so much about HIV, was that there were persons who, especially young girls, who were told that they're not supposed to lose their virginity, they would have been persuaded or they would have thought that having anal sex was a way to have sexual intercourse without losing their virginity, because so much emphasis was placed on not having sex, sex being defined as vaginal penetration. So there are many young persons who were involved in anal sex simply to preserve the, I don't want to say illusion, but of being a virgin when they weren't. And the mucous membranes of the anus are thinner, and therefore it's easier to acquire sexually transmitted infections. But whatever you do, whatever your sexual practice, protection must be key. Protection must be the underlying thing. We have another call. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show. Hello, good evening. Okay, we seem to have lost that caller. So we were talking about some of the complications that can arise. And this topic of sexually transmitted infections is one of those topics that goes along with alternative medicine and faith in medicine. Those topics that have a very high social / moral / ethical basis to them. They're topics that you really have to toe the line. You have to be very careful about what you say and how you say it, because there is so much ground for misinterpretation in topics like these, unfortunately. But these are the topics that need to be discussed, because these are the ones that are destroying our young people. These are the ones that are causing the increased healthcare bills in our society. Let's talk about one of the complications I forgot, infertility. What happens? Remember I said that some of them, the symptoms are so slow or insidious that you really don't recognize that you've picked up an infection. And chlamydia is one of those. Back in the 1980s, I think, Dr. Adams, he had done a study on the incidence of chlamydia. And with that view to point out that chlamydia isn't something that we should just gloss over, as it were, because years down the road, there are persons who were trying to have children and realized that they couldn't become pregnant. And it was traced back to a previous undiagnosed pelvic inflammatory infection. So whilst you might think that here in your teens, it's quite well and good to have 3 and 4 boyfriends at a time and you just have a little pelvic pain here and then it goes away. But then when you're ready to settle down and have your children, you realize that, you know, I can't get children, and you get the diagnosis of pelvic inflammatory disease. So that's one of the things that you need to sit down and have this talk with your males and females, your young children. Try to get them to understand that there are more important things at this stage in life, like in education. Right? The opportunity for free education is only going to exist during these formative years whilst you're in school. The opportunity for sex is going to be there for as long as you are living and are healthy. So if you weigh the pros and the cons, you take hold of the opportunity of having that free education for as long as it exists.
I get what you're trying to say. We'll go to a break in a minute or two to give you a chance to recover, because we had you here talking and talking all alone because there's a call now. Should I take this call first?
Yeah, then? We'll take this call and then go to break.
All right. Go ahead, Doc.
Good evening and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening.
I never experienced, I listen to you, but this program is very good. You're doing a good job.
Thank you.
I never experienced infections on that one. I was 66.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll be 67 in January next year.
Okay.
The only problem is that I had an accident and I get lower back pain on my knee. That's the only problem I got. They said I have hypertension, it don't affect me. Thank God.
Well, you just need to make sure that you continue to do what your doctors say with respect to that.
I just take my medication, yes. And exercise and everything.
Yes, so remember, yeah. Exercise and eating right.
I'd be on the bus, going to St. Fit to work. Call my daughter have a deli and a supermarket. So I work 3 days a week, and my body's just 50.
Well, I'm very proud of you, ma'am. It shows that you can age healthily.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
You keep listening.
Take care. All right, Doc, I think we got another call, so let's see if we can access that one.
Good evening, and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening to you, Doc.
Good evening.
Yes, what's the cutoff age for a lady to get pregnant?
I had this discussion with a group of persons that I was doing a health talk on. We were discussing the fact that sometimes when women begin to experience symptoms of menopause.
This will be interesting.
Yes, I really did find it interesting. Can I give you a scenario? I can answer this question by a scenario, sir.
Yes, please.
Okay, I was working and this lady came to me. She was in her 40s. I believe that she was 42. And she thought that she was going through menopause. I asked her, so why do you think that you were going through menopause? She said that she was putting on weight and that she hadn't seen a period for several months. This particular lady was of Indian descent, and she had spent some time in the Holy Land with her husband. And when she came back, I took a look at her and I was like, no, this is not menopause. Mm-hmm. Physical examination and everything. And I asked her to do a pregnancy test. And sure enough, she was pregnant. She was not happy about the news at all because she had recently gotten a granddaughter. So essentially she had gotten a grandson because her baby turned out to be a girl. And what happens is that sometimes women are beginning to go through menopause. And you have to understand what menopause is, because once you have gone through menopause, it is unlikely that naturally you can conceive. So menopause is the cessation of a woman's monthly cycles. And menopause is what we call a retrospective diagnosis, meaning that it has you can only diagnose it after a year has passed. So let's say, for example, today is the 30th of June. Thank you very much. If your last period as a woman was the 17th of September last year, 2018, and you have not had a period since then, you have not gone through menopause until you reach the 17th of September, 2019. So whilst women are going through menopause, there is always the possibility that women can become pregnant. So there is not a particular age that I can say at 49, a woman cannot get pregnant. And you know that overseas, they're doing studies and they're doing implantations.
That's why I said it's going to be interesting. Because we all remember Janet Jackson at 50. I don't know if it was with the aid of fertility drugs or whatever, but she conceived.
Normally, once a woman has gone through menopause, it's unlikely that she should become pregnant again.
Is that good enough for you, sir?
I understand.
All right.
40 to 50.
No, sir.
He's still looking at the
date.
We can't put an age on it.
No, because there are persons, as you understand, women are doing their careers first and then getting their families later. So there are some women who become pregnant at 45, for example, and they have normal, healthy babies. The risk is higher for things like Down syndrome and other congenital problems and risk of high blood pressure in pregnancy. There's also the risk of early pregnancy loss and different complications like placenta previa and abruption. I learned things in ONG. But,
what, sir?
We can't put an age.
Diabetes also too?
There is increased risk in these ladies for development of chronic diseases within pregnancy or worsening of their chronic diseases in pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks, ma'am.
Okay, you're welcome.
I was saying just before we had the call that we can preach all we want. The act of sex being such a natural inclination. Mm-hmm. The youngsters, and we keep saying youngsters, but they got old people like me too who,
older than you, Gregston.
Even older than me.
I do remember one of my patients who was in her 70s. Her partner was in his late 50s. And we had given her a particular drug which was causing some soreness in the vaginal area. And she came back to clinic and she said to me, Dr. Boyce, and she tapped the table, you need to change this medication because this is cramping my style. So never let us get the impression that once you reach a certain age that sexual activity is out of the question. Because I do remember somebody saying that Jerry Entage last week. He said that some of the most sexually satisfied patients are his older couples.
Yes, he did say that.
Right? So they don't have to worry about children walking in on them or worry about
any distractions, let's put it that way. Exactly.
And they don't have to worry about the mortgage and they just have to worry about each other.
So I just made that clear so as not to give the impression of beating up on the youngsters. Huh? Because anybody can do the same thing that you say the youngsters are doing, and the same thing can result, if you don't have the proper behavior, it will result in stuff like this. Now, you had posed a question regarding...
is gonorrhea called clap?
Correct. We're going to get to that. I think we have a call on the line, then we have our last break to go to. So let's see if we can access this call first, okay?
Sure. Good evening and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Pleasant good evening, ma'am.
Good evening.
You and your guest. I would like some insight on andropause. I understand women go through menopause and the men go through similarities, and it's called andropause. I do not know if there's any truth. Could you enlighten me and the other listeners on it?
Well, I can tell. Sure.
I'll be listening.
Sure, no problem. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome, ma'am. Have a good evening. And the only guest the doc has this evening is me. let's go ahead and answer a question.
So, women and men have similar sexual reproductive organs. Somebody has said the ovaries are just like the testes, the vagina is just like the penis, if you want to have a basic understanding of sexual and reproductive anatomy. So menopause, as I was explaining to the gentleman earlier, is a fall in the production of estrogen, which is the primary female hormone. persons or the authorities are saying that andropause is the fall in testosterone, which is that male hormone which makes a man, gives him that drive, gives him his physical appearance, his brute strength. Both men and women have the other's hormones. So men have estrogen and women have testosterone. We need to understand that as well. So they do think that after a certain age, men seem to have a fall off in the level of testosterone, and that leads to a decrease in their sexual appetite. It leads to a decrease in motivation. And then it seems as though the men try to compensate, and then they go through what is called the midlife crisis, where they go and buy the motorcycles and pierce their nipples and look for the young chicks. This is what is postulated that happens during the andropause.
Thanks for telling me.
You're welcome. So if you see Gregson with a nipple ring, then
and a motorcycle and a young chick.
But that's what it is. They seem to think that it's a fall off in the level of testosterone, similar to the fall off in estrogen in women. So we're going to take that break.
We have another call, believe it or not.
Okay,
let's do this one quickly, and then we'll definitely go to break after that because time is getting, according to Rick Boney.
Good evening, and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Hello, good evening. I was going to ask a question.
Sure, go ahead.
I heard that it came from prostitutes. Prostitutes is a frequent brothel, and the brothel was called a clapier.
Yes, that is the correct answer.
That's one method. Mm-hmm. That's one method I hear. And the next one I hear is due to the fact that they used to clap on the male private parts to emit first information from it. Then that's the next one I hear.
Right. So I'm going to ask you, did you hear or did you read it?
I heard and I read.
Okay. Yeah, those are the correct answers.
Thank you, sir.
Clapier, French for brothel. And part of the treatment was to clap both sides of the penis in an to effect actually squeezing out the pus.
Got it. It doesn't seem very pleasant, but I understand. Actually, it could be very painful, it looks like.
So we're going to go to break on that note.
As a nation, we're better. As a people, much stronger. We're the healthier generation. Better choices, better health.
Better Health Magazine, available for sale at all your nation distribution outlets.
And you're listening to the Better Health Radio Show right here on The Voice of Barbados, 92.9 FM, Dr. Boyce on deck. And we do appreciate your calls. And Trucho, if we could have the calls earlier, because when it comes down to the last couple of minutes, we got to hurry up and get the information out, because then we have another program coming next right after, you see. So in future, if we can get the calls early up in the piece, that would be great. Doc.
There's one question here on WhatsApp. This person is asking if a dentist can tell whether you have HIV. And the answer to that question is yes. There are some features of HIV which are seen in the mouth. For example, oral thrush. And you can also have different viral infections that affect the skin in the mouth. So a dentist can pick up HIV symptoms and suggest that a patient go and get tested. And on that note, definitely the last thing that I want persons to do, it's better to know than to not know. For your own safety, for the safety of those persons with whom you would become intimate, it is better for you to go and get tested. Some of the sexually transmitted infections, for example, syphilis and chlamydia and gonorrhea, there are treatments for these. The other viral ones, such as syphilis, there is no treatment. And whilst there is no treatment, there's no cure, but the symptoms can be treated. And these ones, such as syphilis and HSV, herpes simplex virus, these are the ones that can affect your fetus. I mean, they all can, but these are two prominent ones. So if you're thinking about the children that you're going to have, these are things that you want to consider, that you know what your status is. That's the important thing. Know your status. Go and get tested. You're not going to be left alone if you come back with a diagnosis of HIV, or no doctor or nurse practitioner or anybody is going to say, oh, you got HIV, oh well, too bad for you. No, you're channeled through the appropriate streams, and you are supported simply because still in our society, like Mr. Holt was saying, we've not reached a point where persons are going to be very divulging of their statuses if they have HIV. It's still a very private thing.
Mm-hmm.
And And until we remove the discrimination, it's going to be one of those underground things, and the risk of people acquiring it will always be there. But get tested. We didn't get the chance to talk about things like bacterial vaginosis and vaginal candidiasis.
Guess what, doctor?
There will be another show.
You got it. In season two, we've got another program coming your way.
We are looking forward to season two coming up in August, and we're
we're in season two.
Has it been? Is it really?
Yes, because we had the quiz competition at the end of the first season last year, remember?
No. You asked me if I remembered. No, I don't remember.
Oh, you don't remember? When you had such lovely prizes.
I thought it was August. It's not August? No.
This is the second. We are in the second season where we have that, and we promised that
So in August is going to be the beginning of the third season?
And you promised as well, just in case you cannot remember, and it's really bad for you if I can remember, you can't, that you would have another one of those sessions where we have question and answer.
Yes.
Right, that will come at the end of season two, and then if there's a season three, we will then start again.
Oh, this is very exciting for me. Clearly, I was mistaken. But anyway, we want to thank all of you for your calls. And maybe this is a topic that maybe later on in the year we can pick up again with a specialist. A specialist, somebody who has more knowledge in these areas. But it was great for me to be here again this evening with Gregston in the wonderful temperatures.
Happy with that at all. We can rectify that come next week. Oh, guaranteed.
Too bad for you. You've been listening to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. Listen in again same time next week, 6 to 7 on VOB 92.9 FM. And tell a friend and have them listen as well. I am your host, Dr. Renee Boyce. Have a good evening.
Thank you so much, Doctor. And like the doc said, next weekend, Sunday at 6, another edition of the Better Health Radio Show.